Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
My guest today on Keeping the Faith is Michael Trout, who is the director of the Infant Parent Institute in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Good to have you here in the studio with us. Today we're going to be hearing some meditations for foster and adoptive parents of children who have been harmed, children who have been hurt, children who have been damaged. Michael, tell us how you got interested in this topic, and how did the Institute start 26 years ago?
Well, the Institute started actually as a replication of a practice I had like it in Michigan many years ago. My interest was and remains in attachment, how it is that babies and young children make permanent relationships with those they love, why that is so important to the child, and what difference it makes over the long term to the development of the child.
And your study in Michigan was in what areas?
I actually studied with a person in a Department of Infant Psychiatry, but the field that grew out of that is generally referred to as infant mental health, which is a kind of transdisciplinary field that considers everything from brain development to character and personality development in young children.
And you have had quite a career, if I might say so, in that field, both nationally and internationally, serving as the founding president of the International Association for Infant Mental Health, for example.
Yes.
And, it's very, very, we're very excited to have you on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. I might mention to listeners that you can be part of this program by calling in with your comments or questions for Michael Trout on this topic. You may do that by punching in 333-9455 if you're in the 217 area code here in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area. That's 333-9455. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. Well, Michael, let's begin by hearing something that you and some of your friends and family and people you've known in the field have created called the Hope-Filled Parent. This is a CD which is meditations for foster and adoptive parents of kids who've been harmed. And tell us how you came to make this set of meditations that people could listen to, and why was it needed?
Yeah, it's very strange. I acknowledge that. I don't think there's anything quite like it. It arose really out of the fact that among all of the families I work with who have foster and adoptive children, I work with a lot of foster and adoptive parents. Among them, there's a small number who have adopted children who have been damaged so profoundly that the children really present unbelievable challenges to the family,
sure,
way more than the foster or adoptive family was expecting, had been trained for, were personally prepared for. And since the result of that often is that the children then get bounced, the placement is disrupted, and that adds immensely to the problem of the child, I wanted to do everything I could possibly do to stop that, to prevent placement disruption. And so I've tried to offer developmental guidance and support to families for years in the service of stopping such disruptions, but finally decided I needed some way to sort of come in the side door. Educational support is not all that these families need. Sometimes at 2 a.m. when they're about ready to pull the plug, they've had all that they can stand, I thought maybe they could use something else, something a little spiritual, something a little bit emotional, something that would touch them.
And something calming.
I would hope.
Let's listen to an example. This is the first cut from this CD, The Hope-Filled Parent, that was written and produced by Michael Trout and others. Michael produced it, and he wrote this particular piece, and we're going to hear him reading it. It's set to music. In this case, it's choral music, as I recall.
It is, some very strange Christmas music, actually.
All right. Yes. Well, let's listen to this. It's called I Get Tired and Forget.
I get tired, and I forget. Okay, so I get tired. Real tired some days. Wiped right out, to tell you the truth. And in such states, I'm prone to forget why I'm doing this. And so I forget how to do it. It happens most when the limits of my power are shoved quite in my face. I see that I can't make this child love me. I can't make this child love anybody. I can't even make this child accept my love. I keep pouring it in, and it keeps draining out a hole somewhere. These are important times for me. When such times don't bring me completely to my knees, they help me to reorganize myself, to rethink the whole proposition, to reestablish my priorities, and to commit once more to the few things I can do. To love a child that others didn't so well. To pour into this vessel what I can. To be ready for the slightest hint of tenderness growing in this child, while not needing anything back. And to not punish him today for being exactly who he is. An injured baby, clumsily trying to find his way. Let me today be a witness. Let me give up rights to the outcome. Let me suit up. Let me show up. Let me be the carrier of hope for a child who has little of his own. But mostly, let me just be there.
We've been listening to Michael Trout read a poem that he wrote. It's part of the Hope-Filled Parents, Meditations for Foster and Adoptive Parents of Children Who Have Been Harmed, a CD that comes from his Infant Parent Institute. Michael, this is definitely a calming piece, and in this case, you've chosen music to go with it that's traditional music, Christian music, about the infant Jesus, in this case, a Christian piece. But although this is a program that deals with religion, it also deals with spirituality and ethics and values, and you see these as meditations that can be used by people of any faith or of no faith.
I do, although I'm not sure there is any such thing as people of no faith. People crazy enough to take in a foster child who's very challenging, I think, are hooked to something in this universe that gives them special strength. And I don't always know what that is, although I'm always curious to find out. But it tells me that they are spiritual somehow.
And you've titled this The Hope-Filled Parent. So clearly you see people who are grounded in something that gives them some kind of optimism about children, even though they're in often horrible situations.
Yes, the optimism may ebb and flow, as optimism often does when presented with challenges. But yes, if they're going to make it, they have found something to hook into, some hope to hook into.
Now, this collection of poetry, you've written several of them, but you also explained in your introduction that you reached out to Dan Hughes. Tell us about Dan Hughes. I think four or five of his poems are part of this collection.
Yes. Dan's a remarkable psychologist from Maine at the time I worked with him, now from Pennsylvania. He has touched the hearts of many adoptive and foster families by the kind of developmental guidance that he offers to them and the teaching he gives to clinicians about how to look after such families. His views are a little controversial. He got well known during the years when all we had for these most challenging of children who had been traumatized was something called holding therapy, a very intrusive and problematic therapy. And Dan was one of the first people to speak out against it and offer something as an alternative.
Oh. Several of his poems are in this book. Tell us about the rest of the music. You dragged in some of your family to participate here.
I did indeed. My youngest son was living with us at the time, and he's a composer and plays the guitar and had a very dear friend at the time, a German woman, who sang. And they appeared in some local clubs here in Champaign-Urbana, and I hornswoggled him into writing and performing a couple of numbers.
And your son's name is?
Luke Trout.
Luke Trout.
Yes.
And I might just say that the music is very effective and quite moving. We'll hear some more examples later. Mm-hmm. And you also brought in your brother.
I did. My brother Chris, who lives in Maine, he's my kid brother and a dear one, and he's involved kind of on the periphery of this field, and wrote one of the poems for it. Yes.
And Laurie Thomas.
Laurie Thomas is the co-author of another of my books called The Jonathan Letters. She's a foster adopt mother herself and a most inspiring human being.
And the founder of Hope Village Incorporated.
Yes. Her intent was actually to replicate the Hope Village that we have here in Rantoul.
Yes.
So she visited more than once.
Ah.
Yeah.
And we've had people from there on this program, and it's a wonderful program for several generations, including grandparents who help with foster children.
Yes.
Well, let's do move to something unusual about this collection, the fact that some of these poems are read by children.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about Your Sweet Persistence, written by Daniel Hughes, that you just talked about, but read by, tell us about the young girl.
Well, I have two nieces who I adore, who live in Minneapolis, and they were tickled pink when I asked them. They were both preschoolers at the time. When I asked them if they would sit with me in a recording studio in their basement, I brought the equipment to them and read some poems. And so it was challenging, to say the least. Neither of them could read at the time, obviously. And so I would have to read a short line, and then they would read it after me and try to mimic my affect, my expression.
Oh, no, you're spoiling the magic.
Am I?
too much.
Well, they would, of course, take it, carry it off into their own realms. Some of the words they thought were especially funny, and if you listen closely, you can almost hear them grinning in their voice.
Well, how old was Chloe? And tell us her last name.
Chloe Percival Flack.
Okay, a hyphenated name.
Yes.
And how old was she? You said preschool.
She would have been between 4 and 5 at the time.
When this was recorded.
Yes.
Well, let's listen to this poem written by Daniel Hughes from the perspective of a child who has been taken in by a new family.
Yes.
And what some of the things that they're remembering and feeling.
I should take note that I took a departure in writing this. I mean, the idea is not that this is what a child specifically remembers, but rather what a child we think may be feeling at the time.
Ah, okay.
Sort of the mental models of this event. Why is this happening really? That's the question the child's trying to answer.
Again, from The Hope-Filled Parents, written and produced by Michael Trout, this particular poem written by Daniel Hughes.
And forever ago, years from now, take a bow. The show is over and the crowd sits there stunned, the water run. Someone's gone somehow. Hearts are bleeding and the blood rushes, it's beating in a flood. In your veins is life and love. Some is worth repeating.
Your sweet persistence. When you brought me to your house from the empty lands, I hoped for days with food, clothes, not much work, not too hot, not too cold, and nights without fear, pain, or touch.
Years from now, take a bow. The show is over and the crowd.
It never occurred to me to want more. I didn't know there was more. It was months before I knew enough to know the real meaning of the empty lands. And the memory of them became even more painful. I discovered the pain of discovering what was missing.
Some is worth repeating.
Not knowing love, I was terrified of your love, thinking that I would no longer exist if I accepted it. And then when, not if, you took it away, I would be nothing.
I am scared forever.
It was your gentle presence, your sweet persistence, in touching me with your smile and voice, and teaching me that these touches were called comfort, care, compassion, companionship. It was your loud laugh, your merry eyes, that led me from safety to happiness to rising ripples of joy, that carried me home and hurled me up among the stars.
For the most part, worse for wear, a devil.
So now, as I reflect on my life and the empty lands, I feel sadness for my unseen self, but not fear or shame.
Forever ago, years from now, take a bow.
You, my parents, finding me and loving me, fill me with gratitude, with comfort, with pride, with joy.
Hearts are bleeding and the blood rushes, it's beating in a flood. In your veins is life and love. Some is
truth be told, I am scared.
We've just been listening to a meditation. The music was composed by Luke Trout, performed by Luke and Leah Fisher. The meditation poem was written by Daniel Hughes and read by a young preschooler's first name was Chloe. Your Sweet Persistence, all from the Hope-Filled Parent, Meditations for Foster and Adoptive Parents of Children Who Have Been Harmed, written and produced by Michael Trout, who's our guest today here on Keeping the Faith. Michael, these have been touching poems and set in settings that I can see would be very useful to families at certain times in their lives with young children. We won't have time to read or to hear a rather longer meditation called Meltdown at Walmart, but I did want to say a couple words about it and ask you about this child who we learned in the poem perhaps sees someone who reminded her of someone in her past who had harmed her.
Yes.
And goes into a screaming fit, and then, worst of all, starts saying to, is it the father, I forget, the father or the mother who comes to try to calm her, I don't know you. Who are you? You're trying to kidnap me. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the parent realizes that, how do you say, this is my child who's of a different race and all this. Did this come from your experience personally? Did it come from something you read or in a combination of stories? Where did this incident come from?
Yeah, that incident actually came from a specific story told me by a foster parent. But I've been shocked now that this thing is in national distribution at the number of letters I get saying, oh, my goodness, that happened to us, the exact same thing. Always at Walmart. And in fact, when this one begins, when I announce this at conferences or other places where I speak, and I give the title, there's a big giggle in the audience as if people recognize the very story. The point of the story was not to make fun of it. The point was to try to describe the absurd situations in which foster and adoptive families sometimes find themselves.
Extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me give the phone numbers again. We might have some listeners who would care to share a story that this reminds them of. If you're listening long distance anywhere in the continental U.S., you may punch in 1-800-222-9455. Some may chuckle when I say continental U.S. because they know the WILL only goes to central Illinois and Indiana, Chicago, Indianapolis, but not much farther over the air. But these days with the Internet, and this can be heard live on all kinds of apps for public radio, and through our website. It literally is heard or can be heard around the world, and we know sometimes is. So if you're listening and it's long distance, 1-800-222-WILL, 1-800-222-9455. If it's a Champaign-Urbana, Illinois caller, just punch in 333-9455. You'll be connected to our studio, and our good engineer, Kyle Crow, will answer the phone and put you in line to talk with our guest today, Michael Trout, who's the director of the Infant Parent Institute here in Champaign-Urbana. We're approaching halfway through our program, and we are going to change gears just a little bit when we go to the second half and talk about another CD that Michael has put out that comes is accompanied by a very lovely produced book, illustrated book with these poems. That's called Baby Verses, The Narrative Poetry of Infants and Toddlers. These written from the perspective of the very young as interpreted through the experience and mind and good writing of Michael Trout. We'll be getting to that in just a moment. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, I'm happy to be interviewing by phone from Indianapolis, Elizabeth Meyer Boulton, B-O-U-L-T-O-N. She's the director of the SALT Project, which is a contemporary progressive Christian effort to find the best ways to communicate with people who are perhaps searching, perhaps questioning their own religious traditions. And Elizabeth Meyer Bolton and others have been involved in this project trying to figure out how best to communicate with those folks. That'll be August 26th here on AM 580, WILL, heard also simultaneously at 90.9 FM HD3, and as I mentioned earlier, on the Internet Live. If you've missed part of this program or have other obligations and won't be able to hear the end of it but would like to, you may do that at your convenience, of course, on many different electronic devices these days by going to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Just leave the G off of keeping, and you'll find the whole lineup of programs from many of the past years, and you can hear this program or others that are archived at that website. Again, will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. September 2nd, our guest on Keeping the Faith, that program will be hosted by Don Nolan, Professor Emeritus from Parkland College of Philosophy and Religion. I'll be traveling that week, and he's going to be sitting in, talking with two guests about life as Palestinian refugees. That'll be September 2nd here on Keeping the Faith. September 9, the guest will be Christine Katanzarite, who is the director of OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute here at the University of Illinois. She'll be talking about the programs coming up this fall as part of that program for people who are retired or over 50 and wanting to be involved in lifelong learning. That'll be September 9th. Later in September, we'll be talking about the Youth Literature Festival, and we'll have Beth Riedenberg, who's the director of that festival, and one of the authors, Alice McGinty, as our guest. That'll be September 30. The University YMCA has been a longtime supporter of Keeping the Faith, and they're having one of their great big local events. I shouldn't say just local. It's people come from all over the region to take advantage of Dump and Run. It's a big sale that's happening Saturday, August 25th. That's very next Saturday, from 8 to 4 p.m. at the University of Illinois Stock Pavilion on Pennsylvania Avenue. All kinds of things will be sold very inexpensively. These are things that were donated to the Y last spring and over the summer. People who were changing houses, moving to a different location, or perhaps to a retirement center, a nursing home. We have whole apartments full of furniture. We have hundreds of items of furniture and household items, things for your kitchen, bathroom, all kinds of things. And they're laid out in a very organized way, thanks to many volunteers. And in that huge stock pavilion on the floor and all the way up the sides are electronics and clothes and computer things and CDs and fascinating books from people's libraries. So do come to that sale October 25, next Saturday from 8 to 4. Costs $2 to get in, but I can guarantee you, you'll find things of such value for such low prices, you'll be happy to have paid your $2. On Sunday, things that are left will be sold $3 a bag or half price for the furniture. So that'll start at 11 o'clock Sunday. And by the end of the afternoon, they'll be giving away things free. So take advantage of that sale of Dump and Run. And a special plea for help. Because we were given unexpectedly this last week, I say we, although I'm retired from being director at the Y now, but I'm still a volunteer, we were given 40 very nice sofas and about 80 very nice chairs that match those sofas. And that's almost more than we can handle, particularly when international students come and say, well, I'd really like this sofa for my new apartment, but I have no way to get it to where I now live. We're hoping that there'll be some people who will bring pickup trucks to just volunteer to help deliver sofas and other large pieces of furniture for some of these students and other people who don't have access to something like a pickup truck. I'll be there with my trailer behind my car doing it Saturday. And if you're able to do that, call me. I'm trying to organize people in our maybe two-hour blocks to be there with pickup trucks to help deliver these things. I'm going to give my personal number right now over the air, so please don't give it to telemarketers. But my phone number is 621-3796. So call Steve if you can help with a pickup truck. We're desperate to have help delivering these large pieces of furniture that students will be so delighted to buy from the Wide Open Red sale. Well, let's get back to our guest today. Oh, one other announcement. I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this earlier. Many of you know that here in the Champaign-Urbana area and really around the country, that Dan Perino died this last week at age 91. Dan was a professor at the university, a dean, a great musician, a jazz musician, and his group, Medicare 7-8 or 9, has performed for 25 or 30 years all around the country, particularly for alumni of the University of Illinois. He died at age 91, and there will be a open house memorial for him Sunday, September 9, at the Alumni Center on Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. It'll be a musical celebration of his life, and it's at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, 601 South Lincoln Avenue, Sunday, September 9. It'll be an open house from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. You can drop by, hear some music, greet Dan's family, and it's sort of a come-and-stay-as-long-as-you-like event. But Dan was such an important person to this university and this community, I wanted to give people the latest information on that. Well, let's get back to Michael Trout, and we're talking now about an interesting book and CD collection called Baby Verses. Michael, tell us how this came about.
Well, as if the other one wasn't strange enough, I took it upon myself to just try to describe, as I could imagine it, what babies thought and felt about a whole variety of subjects. From their parents getting a divorce, to their mom being a drunk, to their dad being a rough guy, but also to funny things like circumcision.
Can we read that on the air?
Probably not. It was undoubtedly an arrogant thing to do, but I also believe very, very strongly that it was a necessary thing to do, that one of the missing things in parent education, for example, but missing things, one of the things that's missing also from clinical practice with children and with their parents is somebody who really takes the position of the child. And so that's what I set out to do.
Let's hear an example from this book called Baby Verses and from the CD that accompanies it. And tell us, by the way, how could people find either one of these CDs or books? How may they find you?
Just go to my website, infant-parent.com.
Very good. And tell us what one we're going to hear. It's called I Figured It Out, Being Relinquished or Being Adopted.
Yes. This is really not a universal phenomenon that I write about, but it is the kind of experience that some children have as they try to imagine, why did this happen really? Why did my mother, if that's what the child thinks, why did my mother give me away? It's fascinating that many children think, even when they are removed forcibly from their parents, that it was really their parents that didn't want them in the first place. Mm. They develop all kinds of ideas in their brains about what happens. And the reason that's so important is that those ideas tend to stick and contribute to the other parts of their personality.
Let's listen now to I Figured It Out from Baby Verses, The Narrative Poetry of Infants and Toddlers by Michael Trout.
Mm-hmm.
I figured it out. I know why she gave me away, you know. It's not all that complicated. I mean, I may be just a tiny kid, but I'm not completely stupid. I think she took one look at me, saw the thing that was wrong, and said, "No, I don't think so. Not this one." And off I went. Taken by the bad kids don't get to stay police. I'm pretty sure they wear uniforms, though I think they also hang around in disguise sometimes, just in case parents change their minds later about kids they thought were all right at first. About that thing that was wrong, I have not got that completely figured out yet. I do think about it every single day, and I try to make myself over, to make sure it doesn't show again. And zip, there would come those police, which is pretty hard, since I'm not exactly sure which of my badnesses she saw that day, my very last day with her. I'm getting quite good at reading my new mother's face for any sign of displeasure or disappointment. Then I just change whatever I'm doing, and presto, the police don't come, and I get to stay. Pretty slick deal, eh? The other day, it totally fell apart, though. I wasn't quick enough on the draw, and she actually got disappointed in me. And I flipped out, and I got scared, and started yelling and sobbing, and I made my whole body still for just a moment there. I thought it was happening all over again. They were going to come. And this new mom was going to tell them about me. And then they would all hang their heads and make clucking sounds in their mouths and put me right out of that place. Just to show you how crazy I became, I actually felt mad for a minute there. Woof! I caught that one just in time. Next time, I will stay in control. I won't tell anyone that I'm mad. And I won't let anyone see what's inside me. It's just too icky. That's what I learned that day from my first mother. And I won't forget. She sure helped me, I guess.
We've just heard, I Figured It Out. It's actually poem number 8 in the book that's called Baby Verses, and it's cut number 4 in the CD. How did you decide which ones of these to record, Michael?
Oh, partly I wanted to pick some that I knew needed a child's expression to make it come alive. Some of them I wanted to read, but knew I had no business reading them. I only read one of the entire CD. So it was just some guesswork.
And you have, of course, female voices. We have adult female voices as well as adult male voices.
Yes.
And your spouse, Mary, helped with this.
She did.
And with both CDs. Mm-hmm. She has a very, very pleasant reading voice. Reads them with much feeling. As I was re-listening to the Hope-Filled Parent CD this afternoon, I was struck by the variety of emotions that come across from both the perspective of the child and of the parent. And I don't know why that surprised me, because I've been a parent myself, but one of the ones I remember was, what were we thinking when we thought that we could bring this child, perhaps of a different race, from a different culture, into this particular neighborhood? What were we thinking? Why didn't we anticipate that some of the neighbors would be negative or scared or whatever? You really get into a lot of difficult and realistic situations.
Yeah. And indeed, there are reasons for that. There are reasons why people don't think of it. It turns out that the preparation of foster and adoptive parents is often woefully inadequate. But it is also true, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, that there are a small number of kids who almost defy description.
Sure.
I work with foster and adoptive parents who have had two or three dozen children and say, oh my, this one is unlike any other we've ever seen.
Sure. And some have been damaged to the extent that they really can't function around other people almost.
Well, I think they can, but the challenge to allow them to is huge because they're terrified.
Yeah.
They're absolutely convinced that they're wicked and evil. A little boy told me the other day that the addition on the house that was being planned should include a jail because that would be where he really should go. That's unusual that a child can say that out loud.
Sure.
But imagine that child not saying it but behaving that way.
Yeah.
Behaving in a way seemingly designed to show those around him that he needs to be in jail, that he is wicked and horrible. That child is going to challenge parents.
There's a lot of talk about love in these poems. How does love help?
It's a very difficult thing because it should be, in the minds of most foster and adoptive parents, the thing. It should be the thing that, if you provide it, will turn even the most problematic child around soon. And the truth is, while love is the answer, there's no question about that. It is the missing ingredient, and it is the answer. The giving of it reliably over time and the child's acceptance of it are very problematic for certain kids who are so convinced that they are unlovable that they will fight tooth and nail either to keep you from doing it or to resist their accepting of it.
To force you to keep your distance because they don't want to be hurt again.
Absolutely. Maybe even at the risk of making you hate me. I will teach you that you shouldn't love me, you can't love me, you won't love me, and I'll risk having you throw me away.
I heard a very good sermon this morning on forgiveness and how difficult it is to forgive. And how it sort of takes a commandment and maybe even a threat in the Christian tradition from Jesus to his disciples to get them to, hey, if you want to be forgiven by God, you've got to forgive people. How do you do that? How does a parent keep forgiving a child who keeps hurting them?
And how does a parent keep forgiving themselves for failing such a child?
For losing their temper, sure.
Absolutely. How could you feel that way about such a needy child?
Yeah.
But of course you will feel that way. So that's one of the things I think parents come to me for, is forgiveness.
When I lose my temper at my wonderful grandchildren, when we're taking care of them, I always regret it while I'm doing it,
mm-hmm.
but I still often can't stop. Can you help me, Doctor?
No, but I can tell you it's normal with that help.
Where do the wells of courage come from to keep forgiving, to keep acting in a loving way when you may not be feeling love? You may be feeling anger and resentment.
Well, one of the external places it comes from, I hope, is someone helping the parents to acknowledge something like, for example, I will not be able to get this child to develop the new character trait of sharing or being nice to their foster sister. It's funny how a parent may get it in their heads that the child really should be able to learn such a thing. And many kids can very easily, but certain kids absolutely will not. And so one of the first things a parent needs to be able to do in order to forgive a child for not being a nice boy is to get it in their heads that nice boy is not on the agenda for this child. Uh-huh. It is not going to happen.
Uh-huh.
The one thing you can hope for is that at this moment, you may be able to get him to say sorry to his sister.
Uh-huh.
You may not be able to get him to mean it,
yeah.
but you may be able to get him to say it. And that's uh-huh. all for today. Now forgive him for his sin of not having the right character traits inside him.
And forgive yourself for not being able to successfully teach him to do that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
We have a caller waiting for Michael Trout on line number one. Yes, go right ahead.
Quite a touching program. I appreciate the discussion today. I wonder if the ideas of Abraham Maslow and the prepotent hierarchy of needs provide any possible description of the stages that might be present in situations as have been described. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the reference, and certainly it's been tried many times to make sense of children's developmental needs, especially when they've experienced trauma or loss. And Maslow's are as good as any. They're simple and clear, and they make sense, and there is some applicability, as there is applicability of other paradigms for understanding what people need when they're as they're developing. But I don't find that in the stress of the moment that they're of much value to me as I try to support or teach a foster or adoptive parent.
Let me give the phone numbers again for other callers who have comments or questions for our guest today, Michael Trout, who's the director of the Infant Parent Institute, which can be contacted at infant-parent.com. Michael Trout is the producer and the writer of The Hope-Filled Parent, and what we're talking about right now, Baby Verses, the Narrative Poetry of Infants and Toddlers. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana if you have a call. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. Michael, you've been doing clinical work, and you continue to do that, but you also obviously are a writer, and I noticed you have a brand new book out, you and your spouse, Mary, together. Tell us about that book.
To me, there is no end to the application of the things that I've learned from babies and their parents over the years. One of them, for example, is that a mother's or father's attunement to a baby turns out to be critical, not only in reassuring the baby of the parent's presence and love, but even of regulating the baby's brain. That part being something we've only learned in the last 15 or 20 years. And so I began to wonder, my wife's field is nursing, and she teaches physicians and nurses about the importance of connection with the patient. So I began to wonder, could any of this that we know about mothers and babies be applied to doctors and patients in a hospital or nurses and patients? And as we began to talk about it and read about it, we discovered that it did. So we've written a book where we try to apply these principles by way of supporting the idea that the therapeutic relationship, that's the part of the title of the book, the therapeutic relationship between a nurse or a physician and a patient is key to the patient getting better. Turns out that there are a lot of people really interested in that right now because funding is being tagged with patient satisfaction. And turns out that patients are satisfied or report that they are satisfied more often when someone has connected to them while they've been in the hospital. Not when their care has been magnificent necessarily, but when someone is connected with them.
And that book is titled See Me as a Person, out just this year.
Yes.
Well, we'll have to have you and Mary back to talk about that.
Lovely.
All right. Let's get back to Baby Verses. Is there one you'd like to read from that collection just live here on the
sure.
on the radio? What
Love
would you
to.
Choose?
Well, as the listeners can tell, many of the poems are of despair and sorrow and worry. And there's one, however, that is a little different, and maybe that would be a good one to share. There's a concept in developmental psychology called social referencing, and it means simply that babies pay attention to the facial expressions of their parents for cues about the world out there. And this poem has to do with that. I entitle it My Daddy's Eyes. I can't walk yet, but my daddy's eyes say that I can. And when I look into them, I know that he knows about these things. He has ridden the warrior stallion down the ridges of Scotland and into noble battle with the majestic sound of bagpipes lilting across the moors. Actually, he may have never left Indiana, but his eyes, my daddy's eyes, say that he has, and that I can. I am of him. I swallow his assurance where it can better duke it out with my scaredness, and I rise. I stand. I step.
And you leave us hanging with that foot in the air as the child takes perhaps his first step.
That's right.
A poem, My Daddy's Eyes, written and read by the author Michael David Trout, last name Trout. This book is illustrated very movingly by, tell us about the illustrator. Her name is Jean, is it Retton?
Yes.
R-E-T-T-U-N. How did you find Jean, or did your publisher find her for you?
No, I found her, actually, at a meeting one time, and she commented on some of my work, and we began a conversation. I discovered some things about her artistry, her capacity, and I discovered some things about her abuse as a young child, which I think contributes monumentally to her ability to draw the faces of children in sorrow.
Her sensitivity.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
What about your personal story? What can you tell us about your background and what drew you into this field?
Well, it really was serendipitous. It wasn't well organized at all. I stumbled across a woman, now deceased, who was a child psychoanalyst named Selma Freiberg, and she had done some magnificent work with blind and deafblind children and was beginning to develop some new ideas as a result of that work about attachment, this falling in love thing, and was concluding that it wasn't so magical and wasn't so automatic as everyone purported. Examples of that came from her own work, where she found that a mother, for example, of a deaf-blind child might be challenged in falling in love with that child. And so I had a chance to study with her for a couple of years and did, and my career and my life never were the same again.
Oh. How many people do you see in a month or a week or a year who have come to you for help understanding this relationship between themselves and their children?
Well, I have a very small practice. I'm an old man. I'm working less. And I choose my patients carefully, actually. I choose to work with people that I want to work with. And so the number is very small. People come from a distance sometimes, but others come from the local community. And I try to choose people that I think I can really be helpful with.
And you have colleagues in the Institute. Tell us about some of your colleagues.
Yes. Martin Srajcek is a social worker with a doctorate who is particularly interested in the development of boys, how it is the boys become men and how it is that men become fathers, and has a practice not exclusively devoted to that, but with a specialty there. He has developed inside the Institute something called the Center for Men and Masculinity. Jim Linder is a specialist in mediation, trying to apply some of these principles that we've learned to families who are falling apart and the needs of their children.
And you also have someone who wrote one piece for your Hope-Filled Parent CD, Tim Shea, who wrote one called You Have Two Dads and I Worry.
Yes.
Talking about a male couple, two gay fellas who've adopted children, and what their worries are about their kids,
yeah,
and what kind of situations they find themselves. I thought that was very well written, very moving. It's about 7 minutes, so we won't have time to play it on this program today. We're running out of time, but it's a very good poem. You Have Two Dads and I Worry by Tim Shea.
And a very courageous thing for them to write it, and I felt courageous in deciding to include it.
Well, I'm certainly glad you did. We're, as I mentioned, nearing our end time, and there was one other piece from the Hope-Filled Parent that you thought you might be willing to read out loud. I think it's this one, maybe, or the last one.
We had talked about this number 8, the belly laugh.
Okay, great.
Now, would that be a good choice?
Sure.
Yes.
The belly laugh.
That winter day, when I was helping my adoptive dad, being nervous, of course, though I didn't know I was since I always was, we were bringing the groceries in from the car. The still white snow over the ice rose in the sky, being drawn up by my father's rising feet. He was lying there on his back with startled eyes, surrounded by celery, bread, and toilet paper. I thought to help him, hoping to stop any rising rage and so to be safe. Reaching down while standing on more snow over ice, my feet flew too, and I landed on my dad and the bread and the celery and the toilet paper. Waiting for a scream, I heard instead a magical, wondrous, mysterious sound. It was laughter. My daddy's body began to shake. His laughter tumbled and rose from him to embrace me. My body began shaking as I was bouncing with him, and the same sounds came from me that were coming from him. The sounds mixed together in that falling snow. I never knew that I had them, those belly laughs, until they came to him and then to me. I've never been the same since we found them.
The belly laugh, read by Michael Trout, written by Daniel Hughes, from The Hope-Filled Parent, written and produced by Michael Trout. If you'd like to find either one of these CDs or the book, do go to infant-parent.com. Thank you, Michael, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Elizabeth Meyer Bolton about the SALT Project. That's August 26th. The following week, Don Nolan will be our guest host, talking with two Palestinian refugees about their life. That's on September 2nd. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public